set up here now. I've got my Madonna mic on, so I think we're all good to go. As we make a start this morning, I can't believe I'm starting with this, but I've got a bit of a confession to make. I always like to consider myself as someone who's got a pretty good taste in music. You know, maybe a bit alternative. I'm that kind of guy who knows a band that's a bit more obscure than you know. That kind of guy. And I was listening to music the other day, just YouTube on random, kind of shuffling through songs. I heard this song, and it actually sounded really good. Really kind of interesting instruments, really good kind of use of light and shade in the music. I was really enjoying it. And I looked up and I realised I recognised the singer, the guy who was singing in it. I was like, oh no. That's Justin Bieber. I like a Justin Bieber song. All my credibility is completely shot. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's something that happens when you become a dad. You start liking bad music. I don't know. So I was listening to his music, and I was like, actually, this is different than the stuff he's brought out before. So I had a look at his album, had a look at his new music, and I was actually surprised by what I found. He's moved away from such lyrical gems as Baby, Baby, Oh, to actually he's singing about, amongst other things, a relationship with God. I just want to read out to you a couple of words, some quotes from one of his recent songs. I'm singing about God. He says, "And you've given me the best gift that I've ever known. You've given me purpose every day. You give me purpose in every way." And whatever you think about his music, and, you know, I admit it's not the best music, it's still pretty good, but it is actually really cool to see what looks like a growing understanding of who Jesus is and who God is, taking his music and changing it, changing his creative process, bringing about a new kind of song, a new kind of music for him, a song full of purpose. And as we look at this psalm today, Psalm 96, that Jay's already read out for us, that's what we're looking at. We're looking at a song that is full of purpose. It's written about roughly 3,000 years ago, and it was written in the nation of Israel. And Israel existed as a nation to worship God. That was their reason for being. That's who they were. They existed to belong to God, to belong to the Lord, and to worship him. But not in a way that was insular and focused just on them as a nation and their relationship with God. But they were supposed to be looking out to the nations around them as well. And this psalm is an outworking of that purpose. It's a kind of a carrying out of that. So what we see when God calls Abraham the father and founder of Israel, God says his purpose is to bless all the nations of the earth through Israel. And that's what we see Israel doing. Their focus in this psalm is not just on them and themselves and their relationship with God, but to the nations around them. It's all about them calling the nations to come and know and to come and worship the God that they know and that they worship. We can kind of see that in verses 1 to 3, this kind of the opening verses of the psalm. Reading from verse 1, page 602 in the Bibles, if you've got it there. "Sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord all the earth. Sing to the Lord, praise his name. Proclaim his salvation day after day. Declare his glory among the nations, his marvelous deeds among all peoples." So what we can see there, they're calling out to all the earth, all peoples, all nations around them to come and sing to the Lord, to come and worship him. And they've been called to worship him for what he is like. So it mentions there, declare his glory among the nations. His glory is his character, what he is like, who he is. And also his marvelous deeds among all peoples. So what he is like and what he has done. So that's the purpose of this psalm, and that's the purpose of Israel. And that, as Christians here this morning, that's our purpose as well. Our purpose is to live for and to worship God our whole lives. The reason we get out of bed in the morning is to know God and to worship him. And again, not in a way that's focused on us and ourselves as individuals and as a Christian community, but in a way that is focused on the people and the nations around us and the countries around us. So as we go through this psalm, the aim is that we're going to see three reasons that the Israelites are giving the nations around them to come and worship the Lord. And as we go through that, we'll think about how that can be helpful for us in challenging us and helping us in the way that we share our faith, the way that we carry out our purpose. So let's get into that. We're going to go through three kind of main points in the psalm. Firstly, that he, the Lord, is the only one worthy of worship. verse 4 to 6. And then we're also going to look at that he's made a way for the nations to come and worship him, verse 7 to 9. And then we're going to finish by looking at he is the only perfect king, verse 10 to 13. So that's what we're going to be looking at this morning. So, verses 4 to 6. I'll just read these out quickly for us. For great is the Lord and most worthy of praise. He is to be feared above all gods, for all the gods of the nations are idols. But the Lord made the heavens. Splendor and majesty are before him. Strength and glory are in his sanctuary. So this psalm kind of like they kick off this main first reason by getting the nations around them to compare their gods with the Lord, the God of Israel. So in verse 5, we see them describe the gods of the nations. They say, for all the gods of the nations are idols. By idols there, that kind of conjures up an image of a wooden or a stone figure carved out of maybe not of gold or wood or stone. These are man-made gods. Man-made gods with no power to do anything. That's the kind of point that the Israelites are trying to make here. These are man-made gods. And not just man-made in the sense that you've made a little statue out of this material, but also man-made in the sense that they're often just like us, but bigger. If you look at the gods and religions of the ancient Near East, where this psalm was written, often the gods act just like us. They have fits of rage, they betray each other, they lust. It's very comparable to the gods of the Greek and the Roman mythologies. It's that kind of spiritual atmosphere there. And also they're man-made in the sense that they often represent a projection of human desires. You often get the god or the goddess of love or fertility or strength or success in war. Often that's what these gods represented, and that's what these nations were worshipping. So the Israelites hold up to them. The gods of the nations are just idols. They're man-made. And then, striking contrast, they start to describe the God of Israel. Look at the language here that they use. Firstly, they say of the Lord that he made the heavens. The gods of the nations are man-made, but the God of Israel made man. God of Israel made everything. That is the contrast they're bringing out there. Whereas the gods of the nations, the man-made, they can't do anything. The God of Israel did everything. He made everything. Carrying on. It says, splendor and majesty are before him. In other words, to enter God's presence is to enter into the presence of splendor and majesty. We've already been singing about those words this morning. I don't know what those words kind of conjure up for you, but splendor carries this sense of something beautifully ornate and detailed, something regal, something royal, something that's almost wonderful beyond description or beyond words. The word majesty is similar, but somehow larger, like the majesty of a mountain range. Then it goes on to say that strength and glory are in his sanctuary, which is another way of saying strength. To enter into his presence is to be in the presence of strength and of glory. Again, strength is this sense of power. Unlike the gods of the nations, the Lord has the power to act. And glory carries this sense of wonder and of awe. And the Israelites are calling the nations to look at their gods and then look at the Lord of Israel, the Lord who made them, and to compare them and ask, who is worthy of my worship? Who is worthy of my worship? Who should I be giving my life to? What should I be devoting myself to? And the conclusion is supposed to be clear. The Lord is the only one worthy of their worship. So what can this mean for us? How can this help us as we think about how we share our faith and how we relate to God? Firstly, we should also ask ourselves that same question. Who or what is worthy of my worship? We might not have idols, little statues that we go home and bow down to. But whatever we are giving ourselves to, whatever we derive our sense of purpose from, our reason for getting out of bed in the morning, that's the thing that we're worshipping. So, I don't know what motivates you on a Monday morning when you don't want to get out of bed, when you don't want to go to work. What is it that you comfort yourself with? What is it that you think of? That often is a good way of figuring out what is it that I'm worshipping. And then compare that to the Lord, the God that we've just been describing, the God that we've been singing about this morning. the God that we've been reflecting on, the mercy that he has for us. Who is worthy of your worship? We need to ask ourselves that question and make that comparison. Secondly, there's also a challenge here for us as well, in the way that we share our faith in Jesus with other people, the way that we call other people to know and worship God through Christ. We should be calling people to make this comparison between what they are worshipping and the God of Israel who needs to be worshipped. We need to be calling people to leave their idols behind and to worship the Lord, whatever that idol is. We can't just say, this is what I believe, and it's good for me, and I really like it. I mean, that's better than saying nothing. It's better than hiding your faith, but there needs to be a step that goes beyond that. There needs to be a loving and sensitive but clear challenge. What are you worshipping? What are you living for? And it grates against our sense of politeness and maybe our culture's value of tolerance. But we're not called to be polite or to tolerate people. We're called to love people with the same kind of self-sacrificial love that Christ had for us. It's the kind of love that says, I'm willing for you to be angry at me or to not like me because I'm saying something difficult or awkward, because it's what you need to hear. You need to know Christ just as much as I need to know Christ. So as this psalm carries on, the next section we come to is God has made a way for the people to come and worship him, verse 7 to 9. So I'm just going to read that out for us. Ascribe to the Lord, all you families and nations. Ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due to his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. Worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness. Tremble before him, all the earth. So this is a call for the nations to come and worship God in his presence. It starts out in verse 7 to 8 with the call to recognize God for who he is and what he is. When it's saying ascribe to the Lord, the words there, glory and strength, the glory due to his name, we've just been thinking about how God is like that, and now they're saying worship starts with a recognition of who God is, an understanding of who he is, and an acknowledgement of that, saying yes, that is true about you, Lord. That is who you are and what you're like. It then goes on to call them to bring an offering into his courts. Now, at the center of the spiritual life of Israel was the temple at this time. And this was a place where they could come and make offerings and sacrifices to God and worship him. And in the Old Testament, God had provided the Israelites with a system of sacrifice to enable them to come and worship, even though they would often fail and they would often not live up to what it means to be God's people. By bringing these sacrifices that covered their sins, as we've been thinking about this morning, this idea of our sins being covered, that's the same kind of sense in which they would be able to come to God through these sacrifices. And in this psalm, Israel is inviting the nations around them to take part in this process, to be part of this spiritual life of Israel. Inviting them to come into his courts, come into his presence, and bring offerings before him. And while they are there, verse 9, they're called to worship the Lord in the splendor of his holiness. That they can enter into the presence of a holy God because of this sacrificial system that he's given to Israel, and Israel's calling the nations to join in and be part of. So that's the kind of idea that we've got in the psalm here. So again, how can this be helpful for us? Well, I think it's important just to remember the fact that we can enter the presence of a holy God. Just reflect on that for a moment. That even though we fail, I can think of numerous times this week where I've not lived up to what it means to be a follower of Christ, where I've not lived like Christ, where I've put my needs above the needs of others, where I've been short my temper, where I've valued comfort and leisure time above things that are far more valuable. But because of Christ, we can come in to the presence of God. You see, the sacrificial system that Israel had was pointing towards Jesus' sacrifice. That God became a man, took the judgment that our sin deserved, and carried our guilt and our shame to the cross, where it died with him. So we don't have to bear that sense of guilt and shame when we come into God's presence, but we can come with confidence that we'll be accepted and not rejected. But also, this is more than about just entering into God's presence. It's about inviting others to do that as well. In the same way that the nation of Israel were calling and inviting the nations around them to join in with this this life of worship, their regular worship, we need to constantly be checking ourselves as a community, as BC3. Do we exist simply for ourselves? Or do we exist for the people who are out there in the street right now? Do we exist to come here this morning and spend time with people that we know, that we like, that we feel comfortable around? Or are we focused more on being a place where people can come and meet and know the living God through Christ? We don't just exist for you and me, we exist for the people who are out there. And that constantly needs, we need to be evaluating the things that we do as a community, the way that we interact with each other, the way that we talk to people who come, the way that we approach Sunday mornings, what we expect to get out of it, or what we expect to give when we come on a Sunday morning. There needs to be that united sense of part of our purpose as a community is to be including other people, being inviting other people in. That needs to be a huge part of who we are and what we do. Finally, we're going to finish by looking at the last four verses in this psalm, verses 10 to 13. And this psalm ends with describing the Lord as a perfect king. So verse 10. Say among the nations, the Lord reigns. The world is firmly established. It cannot be moved. He will judge the peoples with equity. Let the heavens rejoice. Let the earth be glad. Let the sea resound and all that is in it. Let the fields be jubilant and everything in them. Let all the trees and the forests sing for joy. Let all creation rejoice before the Lord, for he comes. He comes to judge the earth. He will judge the world in righteousness and the people in his faithfulness. So it starts verse 10 with picturing the Lord as a ruler. Same in the nations, the Lord reigns. He's the one, he rules, he reigns. And then it goes on to describe the kind of ruler that he is. And you might notice throughout this section there's a repeated word, judge, that he is brings some kind of judgment. And the focus here is on the kind of judgment that he brings. So some words that describe it. He will judge the peoples with equity, that's in verse 10. And then down at the end of verse 13, he will judge the world in righteousness and the peoples in his faithfulness. Equity, righteousness, and faithfulness. The picture here is of a ruler who is just, who brings about a right order to the world. That's what the Israelites are focusing on here. Is the Lord who is the one who can bring about that sense of that reality of justice in the world. And more than that, his just rule also gives stability. So verse 10 we see, the world is firmly established and it cannot be moved. This is linked to his rule, his reign. The fact that there is security and peace is linked to the rule and the reign of God. And this is a picture of a world of peace and security, of justice. The world as it was meant to be. And this reality causes creation to rejoice, even the very creation that we live in, to worship God, so that the heavens rejoice and the earth be glad, that the sea resound and all that is in it, that the fields be jubilant and everything in them, that the trees and forests sing for joy. The sense that the world is worshipping God because it's being restored to what it is meant to be, that God's justice, God's rule, brings about the world as it was meant to be. But this is a million miles away from the world that we see around us right now. I don't think you could use the words peace, security, and justice to describe Syria. And we're actually not capable of creating those things as much as we yearn for them, as much as our world yearns for them, peace, security, and justice. We seem incapable of making it happen. That's because it's not simple. Just look at the divide in opinion over the decision to bomb IS in Syria. I imagine there'd be even a divide of opinion in this room. Is it right or is it wrong? Is that ultimately going to bring about peace, security, and justice in Syria? The fact is, it's not a simple question to answer. And that just goes to show that it's absolutely impossible for us as human beings to create that kind of lasting peace, security, and justice. Even if we can create it temporarily, it never lasts. We can never create it in a lasting way. And this would be the reality for the people 3,000 years ago who this psalm was being sung to, the nations. They would have the same kinds of wars, the same kinds of strife, the same lack of peace, security, and justice. And the Israelites are saying, the Lord is the one who will bring this about. He is the one who is able to bring this about. He's the one we can put our hope in to bring this about. We do that by recognizing him as Lord. There's a choice for the nations here in how they respond. There's a choice for us as well. Are we going to recognize this Lord and this God to come and know and worship him, or are we going to reject his rule? You see, the root of all sin is man's rejection of God, the desire for man to be God ourselves, to be our own God, to live for our own desires. That's where conflict comes from a conflict of desires. I have one desire, you have another, that's in conflict, that brings about war. It's because we want to be our own gods. And there's a sense in which we have a choice to make each and every day, to reject God's rule or to accept it. And the fact is that one day, as this psalm kind of says it towards the end, he will come and he will judge the earth. And we, on that day, we're going to either accept his rule or we're going to reject it. That's the reality of it. And that's the choice that we're making now, right this second, is the choice that we're going to make then. To accept him as Lord, to recognize, to ascribe to him that these things are true. To know that we can come to him despite our failures, despite everything, because of Christ, because Christ took the punishment for our guilt. Or we can reject that rule. So that's the thought that I want to leave us with this morning. As we look at this psalm, that the Lord is so worthy of our worship, so worthy of our acknowledgement of his rule. And as the band comes up now, why don't we just reflect on that, reflect on it in our own hearts. Just about how we recognize the Lord and how we call others to recognize him too. And then we're going to sing two songs to close.